This episode of The Line is brought to you by Audible.com, offering more than 180,000 titles for smartphone, tablet, and desktop. To get a free audiobook of your choice and help Trek.fm at the same time, visit audibletrial.com/trekfm. And also by Enterprise in Space, an international program of the nonprofit National Space Society. Find out how you can help science and education and become a virtual crew member aboard the NSS Enterprise Orbiter by visiting enterpriseinspace.org. And if you want to join the conversation and share your thoughts on this episode, join the Babel Conference, our listeners group on Facebook. Just type B-A-B-E-L into the Facebook search field. We look forward to seeing you there.
You're listening to Trek FM.
Welcome to The Line, Trek FM's podcast dedicated to Star Trek Picard. I'm Chrissy DeClercq-Zalagi, and I'm here with my co-hosts, Justin Ozer and Brandon Shemutala, who are definitely not agents of a secret Romulan spy agency. How are you guys today?
I don't know what you're talking about. How is who?
I understand.
What am I? Who am I? No, I'm doing great. It's great to be here talking about Picard again for the second episode. Yeah,
yes.
That's exciting. Can't believe it's actually happening.
Good morning, plastic podcasters.
Yep.
Hell yeah.
Hell yeah.
Wow. Did you get a haircut there, Chrissy?
I did.
You look like a plucked whack-ack.
Thanks, I think.
I'm glad you said that, because I didn't get down the term that he said. Yeah,
I like wrote it down listened to it a couple times, and then I just turned on the subtitles. I'm like, what is he saying? What's a whack-ack?
Right? Yeah.
What's a whack?
I hope we find out what that is.
It's a British phrase. Anyway.
Some kind of animal that they eat. So, Justin, what did you think? General thoughts about the episode yesterday?
To see it for the first time yesterday, Maps and Legends. So this was an interesting episode for me because, you know, we talked about the first episode last week and I talked about how much I loved it. And I really knew, like, from the very start, I just loved it, like, through and through. With this one, it was kind of like I was having to adjust and get into it and see kind of where it was going. And then I felt like it was picking up steam and I liked it, like, more and more, especially in the second half. And then I rewatched it today and really, like, paying attention to what was going on. And I really loved it. But it's one of those that took a little bit of time because you're like orienting yourself to new concepts and things that they're throwing out. So it threw me off for a bit, but mm-hmm. I did end up really loving it. Yeah.
Yeah. It definitely had a very different tone than the last episode. Like it felt mm-hmm. different, mm-hmm. edited different, you know, the style of the storytelling. It was very good, but in a nutshell, it just left me wanting the next episode because
right
it, you know, it's hard to judge this episode on its own because it's an exposition episode. It gives us a lot of information. There's a lot of information dumping in this episode, so mm-hmm. basically in a nutshell I just want to see the next one.
Yeah,
six yeah.
more days to do so.
Yeah, I was thinking it's just a good second episode of a series because it answers a few of the questions that you get from the first episode. It presents new ones to give everybody a reason to tune in next week. So, mm-hmm. good second episode.
Yeah.
Okay, so let's talk about favorite moments. Brandon, what was your favorite moment?
I don't know if this is like one of the ones that's going to happen for the callbacks for the canon uh-huh. and whatnot, but I got to start with this one here. My favorite moment was when they mentioned the Stargazer. Actually went, yeah, when they said it. So I was very excited to hear that because it's an era of Picard's life that I really love. You know, some of my favorite Star Trek novels are Michael Jan Friedman's Stargazer novels.
Man, and I still need to read those.
They're really good. They're very, very quick reads.
I've heard they're really good, but like I have like 500 on my backlog, so it may take a little time.
Yeah, I've read them a couple of times. You know, there's a great one with Guinan, like little hint here. There's a great one with Guinan and an Auburn Tain. You know, so yeah, there's some really cool stuff.
Oh, man, but there's like cool. so many novels I want to read right now, but that's cool. But I will have a question related to that in our canon section.
Okay. Well, I have one more moment mm-hmm. that I think is really fantastic. Well, two more moments, actually, that I think are fantastic. So,
oh, sure. Why not?
Why not here? It's such a subtle thing. And I would like to ask Hunnelly Culpepper this. Like, is this a direction style? Is mm-hmm. this a writing moment, or is this an actor's choice? And it's when Raffi, right at the end, she like gets upset at Picard, and then she just chucks whatever liquid is out
yes.
in the cup. Because she's like, I just got to drink that wine because that right? wine is yep. so good. You know, it's just a subtle little thing with the way she chucks that mm-hmm. liquid out, water, vodka, whatever's in there.
I love that.
She's like, I got to have some yeah. of that wine.
And you got to know her personality in that moment. And she was only in like a minute of the episode, but you really mm-hmm. got to know her even just from that gesture. It was great.
Yep, yeah, I love that one. So I'll save my other one just in case you guys okay. want to mention it. So Justin, go ahead.
Yeah. Okay. So it's not really a moment, but it's really every time that you see Laris on screen, she is becoming like a real favorite character because, mm-hmm. you know, she's this Romulan woman that's been in the Tal Shiar, but mm-hmm. she has, you know, this Irish accent and personality, I assume from learning English from somebody who's Irish. And like, there's just something about the way that she interacts and she talks about things. I really chuckled at some things that she was saying in this episode. Yep. I didn't expect that, but I just love her character and want to see more. And of course, having read the comics, you get more background about how she and Jaban kind of got to be with Picard. And I realized, of course, after the last episode, we were talking about Jaban and Laris. And I think, Chrissy, you had put a little something in like, oh, they're in the comics. And I totally missed that. I totally didn't make the connection until after the episode, like that they were in the comics as well. So I went ahead and reread the two comics and then read the third one before the episode came out. So you see all this connection. And just like the on-screen presence that Orla Brady has as this character is awesome. So mm-hmm. I it was a favorite moment, like whenever she was on screen, really.
Yeah. Her line when she's like, idiot, he cannot go at all. And she slaps him there. Like, you know,
yeah.
we all chuckled yes. at that. I mean, my wife and I both chuckled at that.
It and she just plays the character so naturally. It's just,
yeah, she's wonderful.
She's wonderful. She's wonderful.
Love it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That was my other moment right there.
Oh, was it? Okay.
Yeah, so.
And yeah. See, that was mine too, because I had written down this when she says, go and take that one with you. You can die together.
You can die together. Right? Yeah.
I love that.
It's fantastic. So, yeah.
I will say, though, I also laughed at the scene, with Lieutenant Raffi, Rizzo, excuse me, yeah. Talking to the Romulan agent, her brother, I guess, mm-hmm. About how he was on top of the situation, and she's kind of glances over to the bed, and it's really predictable, but so funny.
Yeah.
So let's just jump right into the opening of the episode with the attack on Mars in 2385. Justin, what were your thoughts on that?
Well, first of all, we got a year, which we didn't get in Children of Mars, so that was nice.
Oh, true.
Mm-hmm. Also, another note, just a side note. Last time I had like a question or about like when does this take place? It seemed like maybe it was 2397 because it was 10 years from the supernova going off. But it was clear from the episode, like it's definitely 2399. And when I rewatched the first episode, I was like, yeah, they don't exactly say it's the 10th anniversary. It's 10 years since something, whatever. So anyway, 2385 for this attack. And I was just really struck. I think I had an idea that at some point they were going to go back to it and kind of show you what happened. I didn't realize it would be like right at the beginning. Uh-huh. So just watching this thing, there were so many things that were going through my mind. I mean, first of all, like the scenes that they had of Mars and all the ships and all of that looked really great. But then, you know, you go in and they're storing these androids like in this closet, right? Mm-hmm. At just dark at night. And this guy mm-hmm. says kind of jokingly, like, you know, good morning, plastic people. So it's, and that had such a resonance with what Guinan was saying in The Measure of a Man, that it's like a race of disposable people. Because you yep. think of something that's plastic as like, oh yeah, it's, you know, I can throw that out. Right. So that was really striking. And you know, how different these androids are, that it's not, I mean, like Data is, we talked about this before, Brandon, I'm sure, but Data is supposed to not have emotions, but mm-hmm. that didn't happen really until partway into the series. And Brent Spiner does really give it more than just like something like really like flat and cold. But for these androids, mm-hmm. for the most part, it's just kind of like flat and cold and kind of chilling, and just seeing how they're treating them and making these jokes and all of that. And then just all of a sudden, I don't know what happens. He gets some message or something and just starts taking down the defense shield and killing people. It was just like a real like gut punch of a scene. Like, oh, it was tough to watch. Mm-hmm. It really was, but it was yeah. very effective in that way.
I think it's yeah. really interesting because what I got out of that scene mm. is that the rogue synths didn't revolt. Somebody mm-hmm. programmed them to attack.
That's what I got as well, because you see something kind of go off in his eyes, and then he just goes over to the panel and does stuff.
Yeah. Right. Mm-hmm. So, like, in the Children of Mars, I was left with the impression that they had just had enough and decided to revolt, kind of like, you know, the holograms at the end of Author were kind of have fed up, and it felt like they might revolt. That's what I thought was going to happen. But, yeah, with that downloading symbol on the eyes, like, it looked like there was a progress bar on his eyes, and... Yeah. You know, it made me question, well, why did the robot kill itself at the end? I guess it's kind of to get rid of evidence, but I mean, the planet was getting destroyed anyways, but probably think could also be that he was conflicted with his own programming.
Yes.
Right. And then decided to be like, I'm doing things wrong here. And so I'm going to end my life.
That's the sense I get. It's like he and others were like turned on at a certain point, right? In order to take these actions. And then once he had taken the action, they didn't need it anymore and severed the connection. And then he realized, like, oh my God, what have I done? Mm-hmm. And kills himself. So that's what I took out of it, which is like, ugh.
Yeah, but I think it's clear they didn't do this willingly. They just, it was forced upon them.
And I think it's clear from the rest of the episode that these are some strings being pulled by a specific Romulan group. So that kind of feeds into that, yeah. Mm-hmm.
I was absolutely sure that it was how is it put in Star Trek VI? First rule of assassination, kill the assassins. Mm-hmm. So it made sense to me with that. And it seems to me that they should have known pretty quickly, and we may find that they did. Well, no, I guess they didn't know that it wasn't Rogue Synth specifically. Because if they'd known they'd been controlled by something else.
No, they don't know, because I think the evidence is gone. Like, they all die. Mm-hmm. And then Picard says in the first episode, like, we still don't know why that happened.
Yeah. So there's nothing left of them, but, you know, the fire that's been burning for a decade. So it makes sense to have killed them, to have them kill themselves to program them that way so that there isn't the evidence.
I think maybe it's ambiguous, mm-hmm. but I took it as that, you know, if they were destroying a lot of stuff, this guy could have been destroyed along with it. But but he kind of got back into himself and made a decision like, I can't believe that I did that. I can't live any longer. But yeah, mm-hmm. I don't know.
I guess that brings me to the question, if those droids are actually sentient. And again, of course, there is that, where's the line drawn? Just like we have to ask ourselves in Measure of a Man.
But the line must be drawn here.
Exactly.
This far. No further.
So that's a good question, because that's something that that's a problem that I've had with fan response to artificial intelligence in Star Trek in general. So now I know that I've said this elsewhere, that I don't believe that artificial intelligence will ever get to the point that Data is portrayed on screen, the Doctor is portrayed on screen. I don't think it'll ever get that way. We care about these characters because they're played by the actors of Brent Spiner, Robert Picardo, etc. Okay? So that's why we love these characters. But when you look at these aliens at the beginning, or sorry, these androids at the beginning, like, they're moving robotically, they're talking robotically, they're doing programmed responses that they've been taught. Like, hell yeah, is obviously something that they've taught them. Like, so we have a program in Katimovic in Canada called Katimovic, and it was a youth program, and they send you across Canada. And when I went, it was for 7 months, and you live with a bunch of people from across Canada, a bunch of French people. And the first thing that everybody does is teach them how to swear in the other language.
Yeah. Okay?
Like, that's the first thing that you do, right? And so that's what's going on here. They're teaching the robots how to swear. They're teaching the robots how to say things, right? Because it's funny. And, this robot, to me, I didn't get the impression that it had any type of self-awareness. It was programmed responses. Do you get it? He smiles. No, I don't get it. And part of the problem is, because these robots look so human, we attach a lot of value to that because of their appearance. Mm-hmm. If Data looked like Robbie the Robot from the original Lost in Space, right? I don't believe that we would have that same feelings towards the androids as we do.
It's an interesting point. Like, and also the way that I think about it is, we may not be able to get to that level, just like maybe we'll never have warp drive technology because it's beyond our capabilities or something like that. But I do think within the Star Trek universe, they are able to do these things to allow for sentient artificial intelligence, because I do think of Data as sentient. I do think of the EMH as sentient, because they have such an awareness of themselves mm-hmm. and their environment, and mm-hmm. they can kind of dynamically interact with it. So it's almost like whether it's a facsimile or not, like it very much seems that way to me. Yeah. Now for these androids in this episode, I'm a little bit conflicted about it, because it does seem like, yeah, they're very robotic, very, very much limited. Mm-hmm. But I also had this mm-hmm. thought, like, what if it's the case that it was thought that it would be too dangerous for them to kind of like expand their programming or whatever, like Data and the Doctor uh-huh. do. So they wanted it to be more limited, but they were working from, you know, what had been done before, and maybe they needed to actually have something within there where there is some sentience that's kind of like locked away in a prison. I don't know why I had that idea, and ooh. It could very much not be like that, but I almost felt like there's something that's being consciously suppressed that is actually there. Mm-hmm. Just a feeling I had.
Yeah. And that wouldn't mm-hmm. surprise me for what Star Trek does. Like, again, yeah. yes, I yeah. believe that Data is sentient. I believe the Doctor is sentient. But again, that's how they are written. I don't believe yeah. that we will ever get robotic life to be that in reality. Right. I don't have anything to back that up. That's just my belief. And I'm sure that there are many people who completely disagree with me.
It would be a very fine. Difficult thing to do.
Yeah, I agree. And I mean, part of it, and I'll say it here. So just in case people don't know this about me, it popped up on the edge, and it may pop up from here from time to time. I'm a Christian. Right. And so like, I do believe that, you know, like the soul and stuff that makes us human beings is something that God gave us. And I don't think people can replicate that. And that's why mm-hmm. I don't think that we will ever get there with artificial intelligence. They can mimic us. They can give us the illusion. Right. With programming, they can give the illusion of program responses. They can adapt. Right. But that's all programming to me. And I believe mm-hmm. that there's a difference, and you might think there's no difference, but I believe that there's a difference in that. Yeah. So
no, it's a very interesting question.
But I mean, like, now there are examples in Star Trek as well, where we have placed sentience on androids and robots that don't look like people. And I look at the exocomps.
Yeah, exactly.
That was on my list.
So like there's an example, but again, it took Data to show mm-hmm. people that. And it took right. us listening to the robot that's portrayed by a human being who we already have attachment to in order for us yeah. to see that there, right? So, mm-hmm.
yeah, and probably if the exocomps were walking and talking, they would have accepted it more easily.
Yes.
Right?
Yeah.
So, mm-hmm. and it opens a lot of interesting questions for that. So, but I did think that too. I'm like, okay, so were they programmed to kill themselves? Did he kill himself because his programming went bad, or did he kill himself because he felt bad for what he did? And all three yeah. are valid interpretations of why F8 pulled mm-hmm. the gun on himself.
Yeah. But I mean, regardless, I think it's a very like effective scene. I was just like mm-hmm. feeling like the tragedy of what was going on. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
One other thing I want to mention before we go to the next thing. If they are sentient, their treatment gives them a motive, which is maybe mm-hmm. why people think that they went rogue. Mm-hmm. Because if it's just a kind of an open joke, you know, part of society that you treat these droids poorly, that you make fun of them, mm-hmm. tease them in this way, then everybody knows that. And then they go, oh, okay, that's why they went rogue, because yeah. they're treated like crap.
Did you guys get the Discovery reference in the scene?
I think that, let me see. I know that there was a Discovery reference in here, and I'm trying to, I mean, it is kind of a Discovery connect. Maybe you're thinking of something else, but it is kind of a Discovery connection that they say, hell yeah, and so does Michael Burnham in an episode of Discovery. That's the only thing I picked up on.
Okay, I didn't. So when they the woman was complaining about the food in the processor, she's like, I wish they would go back to the Uno Amino matrices.
Oh, yes. Oh, I heard that and I didn't even catch. So that's a reference to Q&A.
Didn't either.
Right? Yes.
Oh, love it. Love it.
Yes, I totally missed that. Awesome. Yeah.
Good catch.
And then I had a question that I put out on Twitter. I haven't seen a response yet. I just put it out a little while ago. Do you guys remember, Justin, you went to STLV in 2018, yeah. right? Uh-huh. Do you remember that company that had that humongous makeup stand? They were selling like Star Trek makeup, and they had that really thin guy dressed up as Data.
Yeah, I remember seeing that.
Is that the guy that's playing F8?
I I don't know. I think the guy, I think his name is Alex DL or D-I-E-H-L, I think. I don't know if it's the same person. That would be interesting.
Yeah. To me, it looks like him. It looks, but he doesn't have hair, right? So, but, and when he played Data at STLV, he had hair. I wonder. So I tweeted that out. If anybody knows if that's the guy.
I was trying to remember even what company it was.
Yeah. I couldn't remember. I was trying to look it up and I couldn't find it. So.
Oh, wow.
It's right on the tip of my tongue because I remember my sister. Yeah. Got a badge of the makeup, but I can't for the life of me remember.
We may come back to this later in the episode. I may look it up while we're talking.
I'm sure people are listening right now and shouting, it's blah, blah, blah. Okay.
Yeah.
Tell us in the Babel conference. All right. So let's talk about the conversation about the Zatvash. I'm sure I'm mispronouncing that.
Zatvash,
and the visit to Daj's apartment. Brandon, what'd you think about that?
Okay, so since we're jumping right here, so this is one of the things that I had under issues with the show, issues with the episode that I can bring up. I thought the editing of the two sequences together was overly complicated and unnecessary, and it really was really making the scene difficult to follow for me, and I think that they should have just played the one scene and then played the other scene. There was no reason for it to be cutting back and forth. It wasn't like they were, the information being relayed in one scene was actively advancing the information being revealed in the other scene to me.
It's interesting because I think when I was first watching it, it was going back and forth and I was like, oh, I don't know what I think about this. But when I watched it the second time, I actually really liked it and it gave like a certain liveliness to it. Like if you were just there, like in Picard's study and they were just like talking back and forth for that long, maybe it would have dragged somewhat, but I liked kind of the visual interest of going back and forth. But I can totally see that because it's something that's very different. It's kind of nonlinear, isn't it?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Yeah. It just felt really weird and a very strange editing style to me. And it really stood out because it really bothered me watching the episode every time I watched it. So
what did you think of that, Chrissy?
When I was first watching it, I thought that something had glitched. And that it jumps scenes. Yeah. Cause, you know, you're streaming and you can get, you know, you can get lag and things like that. But then once I realized that that was what they intended to do and it wasn't just my internet connection, then I liked it having realized that. And then on the second watch and third watch, I liked it too.
But there's other things going on in the scene that were kind of weird too. Like Laris is saying, have you never noticed the complete absence of any form of artificial life in Romulan culture? We don't have androids or AIs. We don't study cybernetics. And I tweeted out, I'm like, well, no, actually, nobody has ever noticed this because we've never been given any information on Romulan culture. So no, nobody knew this. Nobody's thought of this. Like, but it's given to us as like this, oh yeah, we should have realized that, shouldn't we have? And it's like, no, nobody would notice that ever.
Well, I think she's talking to Picard in particular, who spent a lot of time in Romulan space during this evacuation. So I think it's a reference to that, and they met him during that on one of the planets in the comics. So I think it's directed at Picard in particular, to say like, hey, didn't you notice when you were at these different planets and all of this that wasn't there? And I thought it was interesting to think about because I was like, well, you know, that's also the case, I think, for, you know, Klingons and other cultures that they just don't take advantage of it as much. But
yeah. I took it as snark.
Maybe it's just a human thing. Yeah.
Yeah. No, but I took Laris's comment as snark there. She's beautifully sarcastic at times. So because it's right after she says everything that Romulans do are secret.
Yeah.
So then what? Well, have you ever noticed this thing that we keep secret? So
I didn't take it.
But that's how I took it. So
yeah. Okay.
And then something really interesting that happened in that scene is Laris, like they're about to say, I can't remember exactly Picard's words, but Zaben looks at Laris and shakes his head. Right. So, and then Laris is the one that brings up the Zatvash.
Right.
Right. But it was weird where he was just kind of shaking his head. He's like, no. Right. Before she mentioned it.
Well, I mean, he does, I think, go on to say that it's like something to scare Tal Shiar recruits and something for children.
Children.
So I think he was shaking his head like, that's a myth. Why even mention that?
Because
like,
he knew exactly what she was going to say. Right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, but I mean, well, of course it's just a myth because it's something we haven't heard of yet. So of course it's a myth. Right? Yeah. So.
I don't know.
Of course, like, it's used to scare children because all myths are used to scare children.
Yeah. But like, an interesting thing as I'm watching this is like, I see what Laris is doing, and I think that she is pretty much as she seems, but there's something about Jaban that seems still hidden, right?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And that was even the case in the comic where it seemed like he was a little less trustworthy than Laris. So it feels like there's something that's going to be teased out there with
him. That's what I'm getting at. That's what I mean. Like, he shook his head no, right? And almost to me, like, he's saying, don't say it.
Yeah.
Right? Don't talk about the Jat Vash.
Yeah. Maybe he knows more about it than than she thinks. I don't know. But yeah, there's definitely something in his character that's a little more like keeping to himself and like he's maybe hiding a little something. And Laris is kind of like, here I am, I'm open. So it's interesting contrast. Yeah.
Yeah.
That was quite the information dump scene.
There was a lot of stuff. Like when I first watched it, I was like, whoa, there's a lot going on here. And then the second time I watched, I was pausing it. And then I was like following where they were going. And I was like, okay, I can kind of see like where they're going. And like, actually once I did that and was trying to like follow the course of what they were doing, it was kind of clever what they were doing. But if you're just watching it in real time as it goes by, it's like, that was a bunch of technobabble.
Right.
Right.
So
yeah.
Why would this forensic molecular reconstruction be illegal in the Federation?
See, they don't really talk about what it does. Like it seems like there's some trace of people that were there, but Picard says something about like it's, you know, unreliable and dubious, and Laris says, well, you know, that's what we wanted you to think. But yeah, they don't really go into, I feel like they're going to come back to that in some way because it's another thing they're introducing we haven't really seen before, I think.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Because it's weird technology. I don't quite understand why it would be illegal in the Federation. The only thing that I could think of that would make it illegal in the Federation is if they thought it was unreliable, which Laris says, yeah, we wanted you to think that. If they tried to use it as evidence in a case and they didn't consider it reliable, then it's just making it illegal is, that'd be like saying, you know, some cops have brought psychics in on investigations, right? And it's like, it's not illegal to bring in a psychic, but a psychic's not the most reliable thing. I don't know. Maybe that's just a movie trope and cops don't actually bring in psychics. I don't know. So, what do I know?
I mean, it could be like some stuff can be inadmissible as evidence in court, but illegal makes it sound like that's a really criminal act to use that. There must be some other usage of it we don't know or something.
Mm-hmm. Well,
go ahead.
Oh, I was. I think you could, if you can use it to see any action that happened in a space,
for could be a privacy violation, right?
Exactly. Yeah. I mean, you can walk into somebody's bedroom and have pornography.
Because I even felt that while she was doing it. I was like, that was a private moment, and you're seeing it now, like after they're dead. So that's kind of.
But I mean, and you can walk in the holodeck at any time.
Lock your holodeck doors, people.
Lock your holodeck doors.
But yeah, it's an interesting thought. The only thing I can think of is it violates privacy by doing that. Mm-hmm.
The other thing that bothered me about that was she said they dumped a bunch of some kind of radiation. But even
at,
yes, thank you.
Had to note it down because I was like, that sounds cool.
It does. Shouldn't they have been able to see the scrubbers? At some point, if they're able to go back and see that one scene, how did she know the times that she called the people the scrubbers? Or because she said they scrubbed it clean. But how does she know? Like, okay, she programs it in. Wouldn't you have to start at the point where you are and go backward? And then you'd see everything between those two moments.
They're just that good at scrubbing.
Right. So that does bring to my point that 99% of the time, Star Trek tech makes sense. This does not to me.
Okay, Chrissy. Like, Star Trek has
99%?
Asked me. Star Trek 95. Has asked me to believe some pretty ludicrous things. This takes the cake.
Okay.
I think so.
All right, we're on the same page.
This is completely...
More than going Warp 10 turns you into lizard?
More than lizard babies.
Really?
More than Spot turning into a baby lizard. This, I'm just like, what are you trying to feed me here?
That's interesting, because I believe this a lot more than those other things. But.
Yeah. Brennan Baga's evolution theories are much more believable than this.
No, they're really not. But,
yeah. No, but think about how many molecules move around just in a,
okay, you know, the sense that moment. I got was that they actually had an idea of the time that this happened, and they were just looking at things around that time. But yeah, it does.
Okay, that makes sense.
Believe that that's possible, but I think there's a lot of things in Star Trek that we have to just kind of accept. But okay, I can see your point of view. It's not explained how it works, really.
Yeah, I don't know.
I mean, I it doesn't we'll like I said, Star Trek asked me to believe a lot of ridiculous things.
Oh yeah,
and I'm like, this doesn't hold me up. But I turn to my wife watching this, and I'm like, this is bizarre, and this is a big leap for me this one here. But let's just go with it.
Okay.
Yeah, yeah, that's kind of where I was at.
Watch, we'll have them in 20 years.
Yeah, possibly, and then you play this for me, and I'll be like, you're right.
Yeah, yeah. And then people will be walking around saying
a pad with information on your desk. That's never going to happen.
Yeah.
No,
yeah.
That was probably more believable at the time. Okay.
One more thing. Did you guys have anything else to say about that scene?
I have one more for later.
Okay.
Yeah.
I did have one thing, which is like, you know, they beam into the apartment. So I guess they know where her apartment is and they can get in. I just chalked it up to she has like special Tal Shiar, like, hacking ability to be able to find that out and get places. But yeah, they went in there and I was like, oh, that's nifty. And like, nobody's been there or I don't know, let out the apartment again.
Well, anyway. Okay. So I didn't have a problem with that. Right. No. Because like they know who it is. She was just accepted to Daystrom.
Yeah. Yeah.
Right. So there would be a return mailing address on her application of some sort. Right. So they would
That's
be able
true, to, but should people be able to beam into any place they want at any time?
I would assume that's how transporters work.
Unless
you have the transport inhibitor. So maybe people have transport inhibitors in their apartments, but if nobody's there or it's vacant or something like that, there isn't one.
Right, I don't think transport inhibitors are like a standard feature in an apartment. I would not guess.
I would hope so, though. Imagine living in the future and all of a sudden like somebody beams in and you're like, wait, I didn't invite you here. You know? I could imagine it being a privacy problem, okay?
Yeah, we're back to privacy issues, yeah.
Yeah.
If transport There's a lot of privacy problems
around
in the future.
The bathroom really so you don't get interrupted, yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
My issue with the transport in, okay, was where did they get a transporter that they could use that for? Because they're not using a public transporter like he would have used to go to Starfleet headquarters.
I would assume now, in the vineyard they have their own like transporter pad.
Then
it's
why
far away from other places?
Well, true. Then why did he take the taxi to wherever Rafi lives?
Because she's too far away and doesn't have a transporter station on her.
Except for beaming people to the planet from space, but that's fine.
No, that's a valid concern. Absolutely. I'll tell you, that's not my transporter problem with this episode. If we want to get to my transporter problem with this episode, it's that walking in and out of that transporter thing rapidly.
Oh, yes.
All these people. Okay, you want a Tuvix? That's how you get a Tuvix, okay? That's how you get Brundlefly. Okay, if you've seen The Fly, that's how you get Brundlefly. That's how you get melted Vulcans, okay?
Yeah, it did seem like an interesting concept. I kind of would have liked it if they went with the concept they had in Beyond, where you're just like in this booth and you program something in and beam away and whatever.
They had a little pad next to it and the person had to stay in there and go boop, 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 and then walked in, fine.
Yeah, like, honestly, like, on the Enterprise, somebody passes gas and they have a transporter malfunction. Like, okay, like, this is not reliable technology, okay? Like, this is a problem.
It's gotten much better in 20 years. Anyway, we've gotten to the question concerns a lot faster this time.
Yeah, I didn't mean to do that, but that's all right.
That's okay.
All right, let's get back to the next part here. The Artifact. I love that name. And Narek and Soji. So, what did we think about that?
Here we go. So, I messaged you guys earlier. I said, I looked for this.
Okay.
And I could not find anybody questioning this line at all. I thought it was really interesting that we found out that Soji and the Trill Nishala Kunama Destifi were racist. I thought that was kind of interesting.
What was the specific line you're referring to?
I didn't know Romulans could be so hot. Me either. Input any race on the planet in that line and tweet
it out.
That's
racist.
No.
Okay.
Yeah. I didn't catch that as that
I didn't think of it as that, but it did bother me. Like I don't really need it in the show for them to talk about how hot people are, but you know.
Yeah. Insert any race into that line and tweet it out, and you have got a tweet storm on your hands. That is a racist line. I thought that was quite fascinating.
Interesting.
Yeah, I think it's a valid point.
Yeah.
Maybe it feeds into something. But your like general thoughts about what's going on the the artifact?
So I think that this is really interesting that I don't quite know what they're doing with the Borg here. So this XBs, right? So and if you look on the subtitles, it's actually a little X and a capital B. So this to me is X Borg.
Yeah. What else could it be?
Yeah. Xbox, they just call it XBs for short. So they say, we're not releasing them. We're reclaiming them. But it's not like they're just reclaiming Romulans. They're reclaiming everything, even these nameless, which she doesn't like, which doesn't make sense that she doesn't like the term nameless, because if they don't know what they are, it's perfectly fine categorization. But they're dead. Like, I don't think that guy's coming back to life.
They're not dead. They're in suspended animation.
They had been in stasis for a long time.
Okay.
And I think they can be brought back. Like, because Soji has this line, like, or something about, now you have your freedom, my friend. And why would she say that unless they're able now to live as X-Borg?
Yeah, well, I really need to see more on this.
It's definitely going to feed into next week because we're going to see Hugh talk about that stuff. But
yeah, I'm looking forward to that. So, like, again, I don't have any problem with the episode, but it's definitely a transition episode. That's like, okay, I need more because there's a lot of unanswered questions in this episode. So, but this term though, reclaiming them, and I didn't quite know what was going on. So they successfully removed the arm off of this one guy.
Well, Narek, I don't remember, maybe it was Soji, says that, like, they're taking these things off and profiting from them. Like, they're selling these parts. And I was like, oh, that's kind of gruesome. But, you know, maybe they... I was trying to figure out in this part, like, what's going on. Because it's almost like there are all these people from all these different cultures. I mean, you see humans and Trill and Andorians and Romulans and like all kinds of different people that are kind of coming to this almost like it's a research opportunity.
Yeah.
But at another point, it's almost like a tour, but like they're doing work and taking this stuff out. Like there's a lot of stuff that's going on in this and it's like, I don't know. And it's like, stay away from the gray zone. And if this is green, run. It's like, wow, what is going on here? So... I mean, they've definitely managed to create something where I'm like, I'm intrigued, and I think it's going to tie into the, you know, Romulan synth connection in some way, but I'm really not sure how. So, like, on the, what was going on this Borg artifact, like, I was really fascinated by, like, what's going on, but at the same time, I have to admit, I was kind of a little, like, annoyed by Narek and Soji, because, you know, they have this quick romantic relationship. And I almost thought like, okay, you find out later that Narek is trying to do something in order to get information from Soji where the other, you know, synths are and all of that. And I'm like, so he knows that she's an android. Does he have some way of like influencing what's going on in her physiology to make her like fall in love with him or something? Because it seemed like it was like really quick, right?
Yeah, I said that at the end of the last episode. I'm like, that was a little weird for me. And when they're sleeping together in this, they haven't gone to work yet. Okay, so like this is immediate, because she's like, oh, I got to get up and go to work. And he's like, okay, I'll see you at the meeting point or whatever he said, right? He's like, I'll see you there.
I don't think it's like the same day that they meet each other, though.
If you listen, she doesn't know anything about him. She's like, can I ask anything about you? He's like, I'm secretive. Like, this is the first time.
Some coworkers I don't know after years. But anyway.
Are you sleeping with him?
No,
right? So if you sleep with somebody a couple of times, you get to know them. Right. And so she's like, she knows nothing about him. right? Yeah. So I don't know. Like, and fine, consenting adults, good for you.
That's I'm just wondering like how it fits into things, right? Because like it's a conscious decision. Like you could have these people that are working together, but if you consciously put them together in a relationship, it's for some purpose, hopefully a story purpose. I don't know. Like it's one of those things, like I usually try to go along with things and usually like love what's going on. But I was looking at it and I was like, and also like in the first episode, I was really loving like Dodge and who she is. And Soji is like her twin and I think quite different. And I don't like her as much, unfortunately. But
anyway. I quibble with your term relationship.
Okay.
Just because they hopped into bed doesn't mean that they're going to have
it's at least a sexual relationship.
Well, okay.
I mean, it's like relationship in that sense. It's not like a long-term relationship or anything, but I mean, they have an intimate interaction, let's call it that. But anyway, what do you think?
I don't think they're in love by any means.
I think
they're in lust.
They're portraying it as she is getting there and he is just kind of manipulating her. But anyway.
Well, he's definitely manipulating her. That's
But like, what do you think about all this stuff that's going on this cube?
What does the green badge mean? The first thing I thought of was what used to be called I think it's called a gas bazaard. It was this piece of paper that was given to the GIs in World War II that if it changed color, it told them there was poison gas and they're supposed to get out their gas mask. But usually by the time they noticed the color change, it would be too late. So that's what it made me think of.
We have a refinery here in Regina, and I worked a shutdown there. They have these little things that you wear, and they sense four different types of major gases that can, like, incapacitate you. And so
same thing,
when it beeps, it's like, get out, because it's getting to a level that you need to get out. It's not a dangerous level, but just don't stay there. And so, and it beeps really loud and whatnot. So that's all that that was to me, right? But in my opinion, without knowing more, it's also a fear tactic. You like watch for this, and because it's like she said, we've been here for a long time, and I can't remember her line, but she's like, and we still don't know this, or maybe they do, and they're just not telling us, right? Which I think would be more accurate. And they're saying, look, you better be careful, and if this, you stay away from these areas, and if this like changes colors, you get out.
The way that I took it is not that it's sensing anything, but that it's connected to something that the Romulans in charge can trigger. If like somebody comes out of an alcove or they know something happened, it's like a general alert, like, hey, there's something in your section, get out. That's what I thought of it as. But like, you don't drop a line like that and not see in a future episode it turn green for somebody, right?
I mean, exactly.
It's going to happen. But like they're setting up like all this stuff. And then in parallel, there's all the stuff with the Jat Vash and all that. So they're setting things up and you're seeing somewhere along the line where it's meeting up, but it not in this episode. So it was an interesting one to watch for that.
So why didn't the ship turn to ash when it got disconnected?
What do you mean?
You know, like we saw the Borg when they had when a Borg was died or was deactivated, whatever, they'd go and pick up those particular pieces. And then would just kind of
I assume they were beaming them away. Like in Iborg and stuff like that, they walked up to that thing, took some parts off. I'm assuming they're beaming the body away. That's how I've always interpreted that scene. On Best of Both Worlds, when the guy dies, Q Who, I'm assuming they're beaming the body away because it looks to me like they're beaming.
Yeah.
And there's there a line.
Some residue left behind, but go ahead.
There's a line in Best of Both Worlds that says that they I think turn to ash or something.
Here's the sense that I get, because I think Narek's trying to explain it. He talks about some sub-matrix collapse or something.
Yeah.
Like something has happened to this cube to sever it from the collective, and they didn't have time for any of them to like set the self-destruct or do whatever they might normally do.
Which so we saw multiple times in Voyager.
True.
With them setting the self-destruct, right?
No, with a ship just being there and not self-destructing, like just having a ship there. Like there was That's the episode true. With Riley. Right? They came across Unity? A Borg cube.
I think that's right. But it's like something has happened to sever from the collective and they, I don't know. I feel like we're going to find out what happened to this cube. So something has happened so that they're still there and then later on they're found and put them in stasis or something. I don't know.
I still think it's what I said last week with the
neutral zone.
The neutral zone connection. I'm still betting
that
on
would
that
be
one.
Awesome. That would be awesome. Yeah, and let's get Marco Lamo back as that Romulan.
Sure.
Yeah.
I'd be down for that.
Yeah, so it was really interesting just watching that, because you know there's going to be more, and I don't quite know where they're going.
Yeah.
It's all speculation.
Yes. That's fun, though.
Yeah, it is.
Yeah. The Days Since Assimilation sign.
Loved it.
5,843 days.
Yeah. 16 years, so it's 2 years before the attack on Mars.
Do you know they're already selling a product that's like, it's been this many, with like a blank this many days without an assimilation?
Yes, I saw that today.
I did not.
That's
funny. I was actually very surprised that I didn't get an email this morning that said, buy your, you know, comm badge in a box.
Mm. Yeah.
The way we got last week with the necklace. I think we'll see that for Christmas, but...
But yeah, I mean, and... We probably talked about it a long time ago when we were talking about the trailer, but 5,843 mm-hmm. days is over 16 years. So this has been going on for a while. Mm-hmm. So
one of the interesting lines I found that Narek said, though, was when Soji said, you need approval from the Water Reclamation Project supervisor. And he's like, no, I don't. So do you think that's the position that he's put himself in? Is this supervisor of the Borg Reclamation Project? And that's why he doesn't need it? Or...
I think it's because he knows who, he's saying he doesn't need that approval. I think it's because he knows someone else who can override that person or who actually holds some power there.
Okay.
Because you see him there later in the room. So like
he gets approval in there right away.
Yeah. But I think he had turned away from Soji and he was kind of saying it to himself. Like
no, he was. Yeah. Yeah. He was saying it to himself for sure.
Yeah, but he has some special connection to what's going on there that's going to help him with his mission, right? He's not just some newbie off the street, right? Which is clear by the end of the episode, but yeah. That's all that I thought about it.
Anyway, so there's a Romulan Free State.
Yeah.
So whatever was left, they organized a government, and then it made me wonder if...
There are competing Romulan states like in the books.
Took it right out of my mouth. Yeah, that was my thought. No. Great minds, right? Yeah. Yeah, that makes me wonder if there's a Romulan enslaved state.
I'm really hoping that we'll get more information on, like, what is going on in the Romulan Empire, because there was the supernova destroyed Romulus in the solar system and probably some light years around. But it was a huge empire, and there was a lot of other planets, and, like, what's... the state of play, what's happened, are there competing states and interests and all of that. I feel like we'll get to know that, but I'm really interested to know, like, who has power and what's going on.
Yeah.
I'm interested to learn about this, too, because the impression that I got from watching Star Trek 2009 and the dialogue that happened in that movie is that the supernova of Romulus happened quickly. And this information that we're getting now from Star Trek Picard is, like... So if the destruction of Romulus was 10 years ago and this attack on Mars was 14 years ago, you know, they were building the fleet and that's when the fleet was decimated. They had like many years to plan and prepare for this. And I didn't get that impression from Star Trek 09.
I'd have to look back at the dialogue because I don't remember exactly how Nero refers to it. But yeah, it did seem like it came up all of a sudden. And at the last minute, Spock tried something, but it didn't work. Whereas from this, you're getting the impression like they knew years ahead of time and there was this attack and the Federation stood by and did nothing, which is what Nero says. And then someone like Spock thinks he can like save the day by himself because he's not being supported by anybody, right?
Yeah.
It fits in that way. But I don't know in the movie how he describes it. I'll have to look it up, actually.
Yeah.
I had the same impression from 09, but we have to remember who was aware of it. The Romulan state is not going to make this public knowledge until they absolutely have to. So it may have come up suddenly.
Didn't the red matter cause the supernova?
I think it caused it to be worse. I don't think it caused the supernova itself, although, again, I'd have to look at the dialogue.
Because the supernova dropping it into Vulcan, like, made Vulcan disappear, like, pretty much like that, you know?
You know, I think we need to have an episode after the season to rewatch 2009 and see how it connects.
You're right.
Because it's a really interesting question.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So the next thing we see is Picard meeting with the doctor from the Stargazer.
Okay, and, I'm just going to say it straight out.
Sure.
This should have been Crusher.
I had that in my notes as well.
This should have been Crusher. But, as much as I love the Stargazer reference, Crusher's his doctor.
I think this makes it clear that something has happened to Crusher, I think.
Or happened between them.
Or happened between them so they can't see. I don't know.
Or that writers just didn't have the rights to hire Gates McFadden.
Well, that doesn't make sense because they
sure she would have done it.
Yeah. I'm sure she would have
as well. I think there's a story reason because you're right. It is very, like, it's very much in your mind. Right?
They're divorced. Yeah.
That was my thought.
Mm-hmm. I mean, they could be. I mean, some of the stuff that played out in that alternate timeline could have happened here. I mean, we're getting Munich syndrome. They didn't say it, but they're getting
Possibly your parietal lobe syndrome. Yep. It could be several different possibilities. But
that issue.
It's a reference to that.
Yeah. That's exactly what she talks about in All Good Things. Mm-hmm. Which, if that's now preventing him from going into space, why didn't it before?
Well, he hasn't been in space for several years. He hasn't been there for...
But shouldn't that have grounded him after All Good Things?
No, because he wouldn't have had it yet.
He wouldn't have had it yet, and maybe it's a possibility in a few decades, is what I got from All Good Things.
In All Good Things, Crusher says you have an abnormality in your parietal lobe, or in your brain somewhere. Mm-hmm. So if that's the only thing that's preventing him from going into space now...
It's because it's actually manifesting itself more. Okay. Right? She could barely detect it because she was looking for it at that point.
Yeah.
Now, he said, Dr. Benny Yoon says it could be one of a number of related syndromes. I don't know why they just didn't call it Ear Munich flat out, right?
Well, but Crusher even says that there are different related syndromes that it could possibly develop into. It doesn't have to be aromatic. So I think it's actually reflecting what she says in All Good Things.
Mm-hmm. But then he also says a few are treatable... But they all end the same, some sooner than others.
Yep.
Now, I think this is interesting, okay? So, with the way the TV has changed, this is not Picard's going to find the cure for this by the end of the episode and everything's going to be fine. Like, this is a ramification that's going to be playing out over the three seasons. Because as far as we know, they're planning three seasons for this show, right? Like, if this is going to play out. And, you know, that's interesting because I'm thinking about this, watching this episode, and it's like, I don't want to see Picard degrade with an Alzheimer's-like disease over the next 3 years of this show. But that could be very interesting if that's what they do.
Yeah.
Goes back to our conversation about Logan.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah, it is an interesting choice to bring that. I mean, it makes sense because we knew that was a possibility. Mm-hmm. But in this particular episode, it's kind of like, you know, clock is ticking, got to do something. Yeah. But it's left open, like, well, maybe you have something that's treatable and you can live for some years, or we can, you know, deal with that the best we can. So, yeah, I'll be interested to see how they treat it, because if they're introducing it here, it's going to come back, right? Mm-hmm.
And with them being friends, with Banny Yoon saying, maybe if you're lucky, the trouble that you're about to get into will kill you first. Like, so again, that implies that whatever syndromes these could be, they're not good.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So, which is interesting. So here's Picard. You know, he's got this bad disease, and I think we said it at one point in this podcast. Maybe the last episode of season three is going to be Picard sacrificing himself for the greater good and dying so that the disease doesn't get him in the end.
Sacrificing himself for the resurrected Data.
Yes, that was my thought too.
No, I don't think they go there. But it could very well be. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Very interesting. Yeah. And that's something in the episode, like, it was going along, you know, the Borg artifact and then Jat Vash and all of that. And then all of a sudden there's this scene with the doctor coming to see. I didn't expect that to happen, but it was a really nice callback.
Yeah. Yeah. The doctor mentions something about spurts of anger, and he's mentioning that in reference to the interview from the previous episode. Yeah. But, of course, in the next scene, we see him getting into it with Admiral Clancy, and it feels a little bit out of character. And I wonder if we're supposed to see that as out of character.
It didn't feel
that way. He threatens her, practically.
Ignore me again at your cost is the most concerning thing I've heard in Star Trek. I wrote that down.
Yeah.
That is a concerning line. I don't have a problem with it, okay? I'm with the show. But I'm that is a concerning line coming from Picard.
But I don't think he meant it as a threat. I think he meant, if you ignore me, there's some bigger things that are going to happen that that could affect everything. I really didn't take it like a threat or a line that I felt was concerning in any way. I felt like they were having this rhetorical battle over this thing.
But I don't know. She took it as a threat. Like
I think so.
She interpreted it that way. Right. Mm-hmm. So, but yeah, that to me, that's a concerning line. And I'm okay with that. I'm eager to see where this goes. But I'm like, oh boy. Oh boy.
I have to say, though, she was 100% right that he was being effing arrogant. Okay.
The hubris. He was. Yes. Absolutely, yes. He was.
He's right? used to having his orders followed.
Yeah.
He walks in there. Yeah. I'm a captain. I need this ship. I need this. I'll make this particular concession, but it's going to happen. And then she just smacks him right down.
The definition of feeble old man is excessive pride or self-confidence, right? Yeah. I mean, he walks into the building and the guy's like, what's your name? I don't know who you are. Like, he's just like, oh, you don't know who I am? We know who he is because he's Picard, right? We know who he is, right? The whole scene is him with his excessive pride and self-confidence, you know? That's entirely what it is. So she's not wrong. She's not wrong.
Okay, so here's a really interesting thing, because I've seen a lot of reaction about what's going on and people not liking Clancy for what she's doing. And I saw this scene as pretty interesting, because I think there are different ways that you could see it. So first of all, I think, you know, Picard coming in, especially after he had said in this interview, like, it's not Starfleet, like, he had all this criticism of Starfleet. Then he goes to, like, you know, the head of Starfleet, basically the commander in chief of Starfleet, and is like, hey, I've got this information. Just, you know, give me a ship and a crew, and oh, you can even demote me to captain and it'll be fine. I can totally and completely understand that. On the other hand, I think that Picard is probably feeling that he's done enough for the Federation or had maybe enough residual goodwill or something, but it seems like there was something between the two of them from the past, right? That was like a real source of tension. It almost feels like sometimes it's that maybe it wasn't a mistake that the scene before it was talking about this, you know, terminal illness that he's going to have to deal with. Maybe it is affecting his decision making or what he's doing in some way. Because like, if you look at what Clancy says, she's basically like, you know, Romulans were our enemies. We tried to help them as long as we could. Even before the Synth's attack, 14 species said they wanted to cut loose, which I took to mean they wanted to secede from the Federation.
Yeah,
like, which is a big deal, right? Yeah. And she was saying it was a choice between allowing the Federation to implode or letting the Romulans go. And here's a part that I thought was super interesting, because Picard says the Federation does not get to decide if a species lives or dies.
Yes,
and Clancy says, yes, we do. We absolutely do. Thousands of other species depend on us for unity, cohesion, etc. You know what I flashed back to when Picard said the Federation does not decide if a species lives or dies? Several episodes where Picard was willing to let a species die because of the Prime Directive in Pen Pals and Homeward.
Now,
right?
This is not 100% the Prime Directive, okay?
No. So
the Prime Directive is for, like, not warp capable species. The Romulans are warp capable.
No. That's not exactly true. The Prime Directive is not interfering if they're not warp capable, but if they are warp capable, not interfering in their internal affairs. And you see something like that in Redemption, where they don't want to interfere. But like for the Romulans, I don't think it's a Prime Directive issue, but for Picard to say, like, we don't get to decide if a species lives or dies, he says that as an absolute, right?
Yes.
But it's clear from Federation policy with the Prime Directive, it's actually not an absolute. It is something that you are allowed to say, you know what, they're not warp capable, I need to let this species die. And Picard is willing to do that. So I just found it interesting, like, the way that he's arguing things, and he's going from, like, you know, a black and white area, but he's, you know, done some things that I'm not saying that they're completely wrong, but some things that you could definitely question, right? Mm-hmm. Throughout the course of his career. So I found it to be like a super interesting scene where, like, I think it's meant to be in a way, like, this person's adversarial with Picard, and Picard is our hero, and you want to be against them. But the things that person is saying, for the most part, actually, like, from her point of view, seem kind of reasonable, you know, especially when compared to when you see the Commodore later, which we'll talk about. But I just found it to be like a really interesting scene. And it's like the second episode in a row where Picard is having this confrontational conversation with someone. And I feel like it's presented in a way where it's like, yeah, I can see where Picard's going, but
he's not
for
right.
Part of it, I can see that there's an issue with the way that he's thinking about things, which I didn't think they were going to go to that place. So,
see, I'm still waiting to get more information. And again, I'm patiently waiting. I'm not impatient on this because I'm not entirely convinced that the Federation is wrong in what they did with Romulus. Okay, because so. If you've got 14 members of the Federation threatening to leave because they don't like your what you are doing, that's wrong. And you don't bow to that. And Starfleet didn't, because Picard convinced them to go for it. So there was an active thing approached. They were having this pressure from these other aliens, we don't know who, to say don't support them, but they weren't bowing to it at all. They stopped once the attack happened, and they no longer had the resources to do this. Mm-hmm. Okay, so again, we can't help them anymore. That's the impression that I'm getting from this story so far. They're not wrong. At some point, they're saying, we don't have anything to give to you because we now have a catastrophe to take care of. So I'm waiting for more information, right?
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see how they handle it, because I think, like, one way to take the series is that, you know, Starfleet isn't what they used to be. There's these problems and corrupting influences, and Picard's going to help to, you know, inspire them towards something better. But then there's this other part of the series where it's like, yeah, Picard is going along that way, but is it really certain that he needs to do that, or that he was completely right in these different situations? So it's like you could take different readings so far for Picard to be either the hero or the anti-hero in a way, which I think is like a really interesting decision. So,
but I mean, take a look at this, take a look at what's going on here, and take a look at this situation. Yeah. What do we see right now that needs Picard's influence? Based on the story we're seeing, we don't have a lot. Some woman came up to Picard and says, I trust you, and she disappeared. That's it. That's all that he knows is going on right now. He's asking these questions. He's finding out these other things have gone on.
But by the end of the episode, he does know, or he thinks he knows, that there is some like deep Romulan influence and conspiracy that they need to find out, and that another sentient being is in danger. But yeah, he doesn't necessarily have a lot to go on. And it was funny, like, I think for the preview for next week's episode, it's like he's trying to get a ship, and it's like, well, where do you want to go? Oh. You don't get that. But anyway, there's just like this uncertainty. And it's even in the episode, like, I'm going to find Bruce Maddox wherever he is. I don't know where he is. So,
It's interesting. And I'm going along with it, right? There's a lot to unpack here. There's a lot of answers that we still need. We got some answers. We got some great stuff. We still haven't finished talking about the episode, but like, there's still more stuff here.
There is, but like there's just so much to talk about, and it'll be interesting when we get all the pieces.
Speaking of pieces, so there's the scene where he's discussing Daj and Soji with Dr. Girardi, and I asked last week if these androids had a childhood, if they actually grew up, and that was answered in that scene. They are 3 years old, so they did not have the biological processes to grow up.
Right. Yeah. Which was interesting, because again, maybe Picard knew that somehow, because I mentioned last episode, that flower memory, and that is your memory, and they can't take it away. And again, that's something that they do with replicants in Blade Runner, right? Is they give them memories.
But you know what? There is actually a different way to interpret the line, though. So Girardi specifically says, it seems her whole identity was built about 3 years ago. That doesn't necessarily mean she was created 3 years ago. It could be that she had a previous identity that's been overwritten, or they built out a new identity. I don't know if they're going that way, but I think you could interpret it a different way.
So I wrote it down that she said her entire identity was created.
Yeah. But an identity is different from like your life. An identity is like, I guess it is who you are and your experiences, isn't it?
Unless
maybe she had previous experiences that were overwritten. I mean, there's a precedent for that with Data, where they created him and he had like this childhood period, and they were like, we're just going to wipe that out and start anew. So I don't know. But yeah, it seems very possible that they were just created like 3 years ago. So you got that answer. The only other thought I had on that scene was, it was kind of cool that Girardi had this device, which is, it's almost like a futuristic tablet or smartphone or something. And she just like flips her finger and she's like, here you go. And it went out to Picard's device. And I was like, that's one of the first times they're really acknowledging like personal devices in that way, wirelessly sending information. That's cool.
Well, we had in the Short Trek when she sent the picture of the teacher from one to the other.
That's true. But I think it's relatively new for Star Trek to actually be acknowledging some of those kinds of things.
Yeah. It says iPhone 47X.
Right.
There's your
47X, yeah. But anyway, I like that little thing. So, yeah. But it was a nice little scene. Like, we're getting little bits with Jurati, but we're clearly going to get more because she's the main character in this show, and I really want to see where that goes.
Yeah, she's good. I like her. And then right after that, Picard goes and grabs his comm badge out of the lovely decorative box that, you know, StarTrek.com will be selling in a few weeks, I'm sure. And takes out his comm badge and taps it and calls Raffi. Two questions.
Yeah.
Why did he use Starfleet tech to call her if this is going to be some kind of secret mission? Is this not all tracked? And two, how is it that the term hang up has lasted 400 some odd years?
It's the same way we're taping an episode right now.
Yeah,
that's right.
I think that the reason he has the tech, again, this is all just headcanon. What's my explanation?
Yeah, we have no idea.
Right? Same reason that the cab had to go out there. She's in an area, right, that's like very remote. She's living in basically a trailer. She probably doesn't have a lot of technology because she wants to be off the grid. But because of the relationship that they have, they've got this communicator. They've still got the communicator as a way for like emergency contact where it's like, okay, we got a problem. Like, this is my, you're my plan B should an emergency arrive.
Exactly. That's how I took it, that it was kind of like a plan B like that. But I also had this thought, like, we've read the comics. We know that she was, you know, his first officer before. Mm-hmm. But I thought for somebody who was watching it who hadn't read that, they might think he's just like walking outside and babbling and like his syndrome is manifesting or something.
Oh, that's terrible. Because
he's just like talking to the air.
Well, anyway, he tapped his communicator.
He tapped the communicator, but I actually talked about it with a coworker who watched it, and he was like, who is this person? Because he hasn't read the comics. And I'm like, let me explain that. But like, for somebody who doesn't know that, he's just like tapping it and just like talking. Anyway, but
yeah, and if you don't know that, you might assume that the comm badge is not functional and he is really just talking to the air.
Yeah.
So,
but I mean, I guess it makes it through, although he has to visit her. So,
maybe she doesn't answer.
Yeah, maybe she doesn't answer.
All right. So then we have the discussion between the Commodore and the Lieutenant about the Hermit of Labar.
What a wonderful line.
I love that.
Yeah. What a wonderful line.
That's great. Well, and let's acknowledge here, first Commodore we've seen since the original series, which is awesome.
Yes.
I think there are a few Commodore references on like different screens in TNG, but like you're actually seeing one, which I love that. Yeah.
Yep.
Commodores are back.
Yep.
So Tristan Riddell from the Nerd Party Network, he had a tweet going on. So for Admirals, one star, I found something out recently. So one star is Commodore. And I always thought, I didn't realize this, but the Admirals, they have the pips on both sides, which
they do, right?
But I assume that's a 4-star Admiral, a 6-star Admiral, and an 8-star Admiral. But no, it's a 2 and it's put on both sides. It's a 3 put on both sides. Yeah. And it's a 4 put on both sides. So that was new information to me. Yeah. So 1 is Commodore, 2 is Rear Admiral, 3 is Vice Admiral, 4 is a full Admiral, and 5 is the CNC.
She had 5. Clancy
she had 5.
Five
on hers. Yeah. So I was very surprised to find that it's not an 8-star Admiral, a 6-star Admiral, and a 4-star admiral.
That's interesting that you thought that, because I always thought it was like that. It was just 1, 2, 3, 4.
Well, why would it be on both? Nobody else has it on both.
Because admirals are super important. They want you doubly seeing how important they are.
The belt buckle didn't give them away, I guess, right? So
that's right.
Anyways,
but because we hadn't seen a Commodore in the 24th century, I didn't know that one was a Commodore because we just hadn't seen one. So that was very cool. I love that. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. But we should talk about her, right?
Commodore.
Yeah.
Oh, my.
Something like that.
Yes. So I'm going to say it right here. She's a Romulan agent. That's pretty obvious.
I'm going to confirm it for you.
Yeah.
Because did you guys watch the Will Wheaton after show that's called The Ready
Room? No.
Okay.
I have not yet.
So here's how it confirmed it for me. They have a segment about Romulan makeup. It's actually really cool because they're putting a ton of work into this. They have like prosthetic brows, and for the eyebrows, they're like stitching them like one like thread at a time, right?
Wow.
For each of them. So anyway, that was really cool. But then they were talking about it, and they were showing different Romulans in the show, right? Mm-hmm. They showed Narek and some other people. And then in this segment about Romulan makeup, they show Commodore O. So I was like, okay, that's a tell that she's actually a Romulan agent, I think.
I don't think she's a Romulan. So,
okay, tell me why.
She's working with them, but I think she's Vulcan. Okay.
See, that was my first thought until I saw this segment.
Okay. Now, she could just be a pretending to be a Vulcan, but I don't think so because of a line that... I wrote it down because I had this in my theories. Where is it here? Give me a second here. Rizzo says, where is it here? O's been a useful ally for a long time. I can't have her turning on us.
Yeah.
She says that to the brother. So I don't think she's a Romulan. I think she's a Vulcan. Everybody's saying she's a Romulan. I think she's Vulcan.
Yeah, I thought about that when I heard that line, because it seems like Commodore O knows about trying to get information about these synths, right? Because synths are illegal in the Federation, and you know, she's trying to find out what the heck is going on. Of course, her tactics aren't right in trying to kidnap people, but it seems like that's what she's going for. But it also plays into, you know, Rizzo's kind of plot and what Narek has going on. So yeah, I think that could support that. And maybe in that Ready Room clip, they just made a mistake and put in a Vulcan, but
hey, it wouldn't be the first time they made a mistake. You remember Chief Engineer Stamets?
Yeah, they made that little display mistake on the display. But but you're right, that now that I think of it, that line does make it seem like she kind of is who she says she is, which is basically someone in Starfleet who is using questionable tactics to try to figure out what's going on with the synths, but there's a more insidious thing that she doesn't even know that she's playing into, right?
Mm-hmm. Now, I read that as Rizzo's going to be double-crossing her. That she's a valuable asset.
Yeah, until
like
she's
for right now, for what we're doing. But, you know, we'll see. My big question was, if she's a Romulan agent, assuming that that's the case, okay, how long has she been there? Was she placed in the academy, and has she been a Romulan agent for, you know, 20 years, 30 years? How long does it take
Romulans
to get to be a Commodore?
Romulans played the long game.
You know, and she could be deep. She could have deep undercover. She could be feeding. This could predate even knowledge of the coming supernova. And then once that happens, she's stuck.
Yeah, possibly.
So, look at how long, what's his name? Not Nero, Nemesis.
Shinzon?
Shinzon, yeah.
Look at how long
that was going on for decades. Also, there's an interesting example from the book Sarek. I don't know if you guys have read that, but at the very end of the book, it actually sets up what happens in Unification, and it's like 75 years before, and the Romulans are like setting up what happens. So I think if she is, and it'll be interesting to find out, because I could kind of see it both ways, because maybe, Brandon, she is a Romulan, but she works for a different faction than Narek and Rizzo are.
Yeah, so that's like what I was saying.
See, I've been watching a lot of Homeland lately, right? Which is fantastic. You guys got to watch Homeland if you're not watching it. And like, they will do their best to gain assets who are already in place. Like people who are already in power in a foreign government, and they'll exploit them. They'll come at them because they owe, you know, they got secrets to hide. They find out the secrets and they say, spy for us or we will spill the beans on your secret. And they could have done that with O.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Right? She could have like gambling debts.
Yeah.
Wazoo. Who knows?
Oh, so there's the other thing about O, because maybe I didn't get this. You know what? It's probably because she's in a gold uniform, because they were saying that she was head of Starfleet security.
Yeah, which yellow is security.
Yeah.
And we saw the guy in there was another admiral on DS9 that we saw.
Yeah, I think that's the only other time that you've had like a flag level officer in gold in the 21st century.
And it was security related at the time too. So.
Okay. Yeah, that makes sense. Yeah. So she's the head of Starfleet security. Okay.
Yeah.
Very interesting.
Are you guys done there? Because I got one more to add.
Yeah, go ahead.
Go ahead.
Okay, so here's another thing that I don't think anybody's caught yet. Commodore O's line. O says, when she's talking to Rizzo, uh-huh. and she's talking about Picard, she says, he referred to Jat Vash by name. No, he didn't.
Yeah.
Neither did the Admiral.
Okay. I did catch that.
Yeah, I did see people talking about that. She must have him under surveillance.
Yes, so they've got... Now, here's the thing, okay? Now, this is the thought. Now, this leads into my questions, theories, predictions. Mm-hmm. Okay, and I hate to say this. Okay, what about Zabin?
Yeah.
Okay,
so... Like I said before, I had this thought, like, maybe he isn't who we think he is.
Yeah, he didn't want her to say Jat Vash, right? Yeah. So, he could be feeding intel, but... Picard did not say Jat Vash by name. Kirsten Clancy did not say Jat Vash by name. Now, also says, although she did not mention the last part, which was about him going after Maddox, nor the talk about the Jat Vash. But again, Picard did not say Jat Vash to the Admiral.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So she's definitely got some type of surveillance, whether it's in Picard's home or whether it's Zabin. But I thought that was kind of shocking.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think you're probably right about that. She knows more than she should. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
She could have surveillance in Dodge's apartment, too, because they talked about Jat Vash in there.
Oh, yes. That's a possibility.
Could be although, why she would, but.
Well, because she knows.
Well, she's trying to kill her.
She basically sent the people to her apartment to do it. Why, so maybe she would keep it under surveillance to see if anybody comes by.
Yep. Your team destroyed the thing before it could be interrogated and nearly blew our cover.
Mm-hmm.
She also says, yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And
apparently they're in nests.
Yes.
Yeah, okay. The nest.
Which can be completely metaphorical, but also what? So.
Well, also. In the first scene, when they're attacking her in the apartment, this is where are the others, plural.
Yes.
Yep. And here, has the machine given up the location of its fellow abominations?
Yep.
Plural.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Okay, so now this leads me back to the dream sequence of the five queens.
Oh,
you think there's five other pairs, maybe? Because they come in pairs.
Oh, but it could. Yeah, they come in pairs, but that doesn't mean you couldn't have three or four or five, I guess, right?
Or you could be five after the death of Dodge. He's got to find five.
Yeah, so that led me to that.
Interesting. But and when you talk about, like, where is the nest, that makes me think of actually, like, a lot. I don't know. But, we'll see. But there's definitely more than just Soji out there, right?
Yeah.
With Maddox somewhere. When are we going to see Maddox?
Soon. And here's part of my theories. Okay. So I think we're going to see Maddox on the cube, and I think that this nest is on the cube.
Really?
That would make sense.
I think we're going to see Maddox on the cube.
I don't know that we're going to see Maddox at all, but
I think we might.
It does certainly lend itself that way, but I don't know.
I thought they would find him and the android somewhere else, not on the cube, but that it somehow still connects to that cube in some way.
Seattle.
I don't know. Seattle. Yeah. I'll be in Seattle. He's next door in Boston.
Yeah.
For the whole time.
I did see, and this probably isn't going to happen because we would have heard about it. Maybe not. But I did see some people talking about how John Hamm is a dead ringer for the guy that played Maddox. Yeah. And that John Hamm should be cast as Maddox. And I would love that.
Hmm.
But, or you know, the guy from Mad Men.
To play Maddox.
You can get the original guy.
Well, yeah.
You're teaching now. Anyway.
Yeah. I mean, obviously, there's the original guy. But.
That's what I would prefer to see. Would
be the original guy, me too. But. It's just kind of funny.
You got
two shows that I enjoy, you know. Yeah. Bringing people together.
Right. Which, now, that leads me to something that we saw in that scene in her apartment, too. So, when she's like, she found all those false entries, right, where we got Soji, you know, again, there was a lot of false flags from the computer. That could be multiple, that's multiple sisters trying to break into that computer as well.
Oh, you think so? Oh.
Yeah.
That would be interesting.
Mm-hmm.
And that she knows about the rest of them?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Wow. Okay.
Maybe. Lots in this episode. Lots of questions.
Yes.
Lots going on for sure. I guess we've already gone to your predictions.
I have one more.
Yeah.
Two more, actually. I'll let you guys go first. I got one, and I think they're doozies. You guys have any predictions?
Theories? I don't have any predictions. I'm going to say right now that I hope Commodore O doesn't turn out to be Section 31. We're going to have a whole show of Section 31, so let's... not have that
I don't think it's going there, because you already have, like, this kind of Romulan equivalent of Section 31, except they've been around for thousands of years. I don't think they need to do that, right?
Well, that doesn't mean they won't.
Yeah, I mean, and the thing is, you don't have to go to Section 31. There's already a lot of secretive stuff that Starfleet Intelligence itself does. So,
oh yeah,
you can go there if you need to.
But. I'm just
saying.
Well,
if we got the secret Tal Shiar, and then we got the Jat Vash, we probably have Section 31 and Section 32.
Actually,
I can't wait to see Section 32.
In case Section 31 can't do the job. Yeah.
spoiler for the novel Control. So, if you haven't read it and care, fast forward a few seconds. Section 31 is actually artificial intelligence.
Mm-hmm. Which we also got from Season 2 of Discovery.
Yeah. Oh, well, okay, that's true. Yeah. But anyway, so maybe that goes to the... all right. That's my connections then.
I have a prediction. It's not necessarily next week's episode, but one of the things that I definitely made a note of is... when Jaban is talking to Picard and he's like, oh, you'll need a crew. How about Riker, Worf, and LaForge? And I was like, okay, we know Riker's going to be in this show, right? Mm-hmm. I think mentioning Worf and LaForge tells me that it makes it more likely that we'll actually see them. So first of all, him saying LaForge says that he's still alive. Some people who read the comic thought that he had died based on what was in there. I didn't read that either.
Yeah.
But anyway, so they're around, and it just made me think also back to some months ago when you saw like the clapperboard from one of the episodes and Michael Dorn had signed it, mm-hmm. and they were like, no, that's just a set visit. He's totally not on the show. I don't know. I tend to think maybe even in this first season, we'll see Worf and LaForge.
Sure. Why not?
And it's been a secret. So
I like that.
I mean, I think for LaForge, it makes a lot of sense because he dealt so much with Data, not only as a friend, but dealing with like Data systems, right? He was always working on him and all that. So that would make sense. Worf, I don't really know how he would quite fit in, but
I do.
You do? Okay.
Absolutely. Worf is the commander of the Enterprise. Comics, right?
Yes.
In the comics that we've just read, right? LaForge says something along the lines of, I'm sure that the current captain of the Enterprise wouldn't want you to be coming in there, right? And Picard's like, no, I'm fine. And they've got it covered. Worf is clearly the captain of the Enterprise.
Well, it could be referencing Worf.
They didn't say it, but that's my theory.
Yeah.
That would be interesting. I mean,
he's first officer after Data died. He's first officer of
the Enterprise,
right?
Yeah.
So, you think it's the Enterprise E and they've moved on to F?
I think they still got the E.
Still got the E. I'd
Worf's
love to
not
see
a very good warrior, so he wouldn't have destroyed it yet.
Oh, wow. But yeah, that's my only theory. I noticed that line and I was like, if you're mentioning someone who we know is going to be on the show, why mention these other two people specifically? I think they'll be on the show. So,
yeah.
Well, and
prediction.
Because LaForge is in the comics, that makes sense to mention him even if he doesn't show up. But
exactly.
It'd be nice.
We'll see. It would be pretty cool.
Okay, I got two predictions left.
All right.
Okay.
That Go Trill?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
She's a spy.
Think she's a spy?
So her residency was revoked 6 months ago, and they finally reinstated it.
Right? If she was a spy, why would she say something that made it sound odd like that?
That seemed like one of those planted, hey, look, I need some help. Can you help me? It's just one of those things that you feel, and it didn't feel
How
right
about
to me.
This? She's actually one of the other flesh and blood androids.
Oh.
I think all five of them are going to look like
Dodge. You think they'll all look like Dodge?
Yeah.
I don't know why I think they might look a little different, but okay, that's a wild theory. But maybe she's a spy. Okay.
This is not a theory. I had it here, and I don't know why. I want to know what that implant is on the side of Narek's head.
Yeah, like he has something in his ear or something?
Yeah.
Yeah, like I noticed that, and I was like, it looks like a chip or some listening device.
I took that as strange jewelry.
Okay. Think so?
You've never seen somebody with that part of their ear pierced? Mm-hmm.
But it would look like literally like a computer chip in his ear.
Yeah.
But anyway.
Okay.
Okay. And now this is just the bonkers throwing something on the wall to see if it sticks. And it's based on my theory from last week.
All right.
I think Lieutenant Rizzo is Narek's brother.
Oh, that would be interesting.
Okay, yeah. So
remember his story at the end of the episode about his brother and something happened?
The brother died a year before or something?
Yeah.
No, he says we lost him. He does not say he died.
So I think Rizzo's the brother. So this is undercover. Who says he's got to keep his gender, right?
But it's and the brother is posing as the sister. I mean, it seems clear, like, he knows he has a sister, right?
Yeah,
what happened to her?
But but he didn't call her sister, but she did call him baby brother. Right? Mm. So I'm just saying, I think she's the brother.
Okay.
That's awesome.
I like this idea.
If you get that one right, bravo. Because I didn't even think anything like that. Yeah.
Yeah.
Very interesting.
Mm.
That's what I think.
I like that idea.
That's what I got. So
very cool.
Okay.
Chris,
questions
and
concerns?
Predictions we didn't get to?
I have no predictions. I'm
wait.
Yeah.
Do we want to do questions and concerns, or do we want to do the books and comics and canon connections?
Oh yeah,
I have
that.
A few.
Okay, go ahead. You go first then.
Okay.
Yeah. Let's talk about
So canon or books and comics connections. So, I mean, we already talked about it a little bit, but there's the Tal Shiar backstory for Laris and Siobhan in the comics, and it was nice to know that. Otherwise, you might be surprised that they're Tal Shiar. And we talked about Raffi being the first officer in the comics. So, I'm sure you guys probably noticed this, but when Picard's in the Starfleet HQ and there's the hologram, the first one before the Enterprise D is the Discovery Enterprise.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
Which I thought was a nice little connection there.
Yep.
Okay, so also when Laris, I think, is talking about the Jad Vash and who they've infiltrated, I love that she mentioned the Gorn hegemony, which is cool. You don't hear enough about Gorn. Let's get a Gorn in this series also. Yeah. That would be totally interesting. So anyway, I like that reference. The other thing is, so the Admiral, Kirsten Clancy, I've got to think that the first name is in honor of Kirsten Beyer, the
writer,
novelist, all that. Yeah.
100%.
So there were a lot of pretty interesting connections in this one. I probably missed some, but yeah, there were a lot of little things like sprinkled in. Oh, I have to ask you about one thing, Brandon. So this Dr. Benayoun from the Stargazer, this is different than the doctor in the novels that mention the Stargazer, which is Carter Greyhorse.
Yeah.
What do you think of that? They're just like rewriting that, or this is just a different doctor who wasn't like the CMO or something, or
I get the impression that he was probably the CMO and they're just overwriting the books, which I'm a little sad about, but I mean,
because at first I was like, oh, because I haven't read the Stargazer novels, but I've read a couple TNG novels that have some of the characters, and I had to look it up. I was like, is that the same? No, it's not.
Yeah.
It would have been cool if he was called Carter.
Great. That's right. Yeah. It's a different name, which it would have been great.
Yeah.
Well, he commanded I almost said he commanded the Discovery. He commanded the Stargazer for, what, 20 years?
Something like that. Something like that.
Yeah. So, yeah. I mean, he probably had a few chief medical officers.
I think in the books, though, it's the same one for the whole time, isn't it?
Right? Yeah, I think so. Yeah. So,
okay.
Yeah.
This is a spoiler for Reunion. I got to just clarify something here. Mm-hmm. This is a spoiler for Reunion. So,
okay. I've read it, but our listeners might not.
I know that you've read it. So, Grey Horse is the murderer in Reunion, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. Something so, like that, and he's the one in jail and the one that they get out in Winter, Death of Winter, right?
Yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm. But it's a different one. Does it have some Stargazer characters? Is that Requiem where he goes back in time and to the time
to the
of
Gorn Arena planet?
With the Gorn, yeah.
I haven't read that one in a long time, yeah. So my canon connection was just the Stargazer mention. I was like, yippee. That was
awesome. That's cool. That's very cool.
Mm-hmm. All right. Well, I have kind of a... might be an odd connection or a stretch here, but in the Cold Equation novels, Data gets involved with an organization that the name of which I literally cannot find on Memory Beta. It's driving me crazy. And I didn't have time to go through the books again. But he gets involved with this organization of artificial life forms that has been around forever because one of them is Flint from Requiem for Methuselah. Mm-hmm. So I'm wondering if the artificial life forms that the Jad Vash are so opposed to might be this group.
Might be that old group, maybe. Yeah. That would be a cool connection if that was the case.
That would be a cool connection. I don't know that they would do that if they're throwing away Grey Horse, but, you know.
Oh, yeah, it's a stretch.
Yeah. But no, that's I like that it made you think of that. I forgot about that.
Mm. Yeah, I forgot about I don't remember what the name was, but and there are some other novels where you see artificial intelligence that has been around for hundreds or thousands of years. It'll be interesting what story they build because it clearly comes from something. Although Jad Vash, I was thinking like, oh my God, Vash went back in time and affected Romulan history and her name ended up in there. Anyway.
She was with Q for a while.
Yeah. And she got her name on this super secret organization.
Jad Vash.
Exactly. So very cool.
That's funny. All right. So we talked favorite connections, questions and concerns.
I think we still haven't officially done questions and concerns.
Oh, I'm sorry. Okay. So let's, questions and concerns. My big concern was that, not be Section 31, but beyond that, I'm just letting it play out.
Mm-hmm. Justin?
Yeah, I'm actually, because we actually, I think, addressed a lot of things.
We did.
Like them getting into Dodge's apartment and mm-hmm. what time period it takes place in. I actually had a note here. Does Narek have a way of emitting something to more easily seduce Sochi? Pheromones or something? I don't know. And then we talked about Carter Grey Horse and whether O's a Romulan. Yeah, other than that, I guess we talked about it. I mean, I think that they'll do it in a good way, but there is potentially a risk that they're building like a lot of things together, and maybe at some point might make it like overly complex, or so that some like layers of it might not work together. But mm-hmm. I'm gonna see like where it goes. It's always so interesting watching these things like as they're building them, to see like where it goes and like what you think of it week to week, because I think we will know a lot more after next week, which is kind mm-hmm. of like the end of the first chapter that moves into something else. So all the pieces will be into place with the crew and all that, and then they're going to go off on like the specific adventure, it seems like. But
so my first one, my point from last week is just completely reiterated by that first scene when they have the video footage of Picard getting blown away by that explosion. Mm-hmm. Why wasn't he at the hospital? Okay. Yep. So anyways.
Oh, I saw somebody try to address that by saying that because, Laris and Jaban were in the Tal Shiar, that they knew it was going, I don't know. It was some idea that they would be able to take care of it in some way, but
yeah. I saw that.
I know
too.
When you saw the footage and he's like,
yeah.
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 I could see that.
Cause I said last week, if they erased all the footage, they had no evidence of that. And they, even if they just found an old man passed out, they'd still be taking him to the hospital. Right. Cause he could have had a stroke or something. Like, who knows? Right.
Yeah.
But now when you've got footage of a gigantic explosion,
yeah.
And he's getting thrown through the air. That should probably have a doctor take a look at him. So,
yeah. If only in that episode they had not said, the police said such and such. Then you could think, oh, they just went and collected him.
Yeah, you're good, old man. See you later. Yeah. Oh, you're not awake yet? Okay, that's fine. Just take him. So, anywho.
Romulans?
I had a problem with two lines of dialogue in this, and they were kind of big problems for me. This first one I'm going to mention, my wife turned to me and said, that's a dumb line after it was said. Okay.
Okay. What's the line?
When Picard says, I never cared for science fiction, I guess I just didn't get it. That's a dumb line.
I think that's something I think that's a play on Patrick Stewart at one point saying he really wasn't into like sci-fi at all and didn't get it before he was a part of Star Trek. But
or that's a fun line of something along the lines. Oh, look at the science fiction fans watching the science fiction show.
Yeah.
I don't think it was quite necessary.
It's breaking the fourth wall. But I did like that it was Asimov.
But she had the Asimov book and all that.
Yeah.
In her hands.
In her hands.
If he doesn't like it, why does he have it?
He's a completionist, just like me. You saw me tweet, I bought season 8 of Game of Thrones because I'm a completionist. I'm a completionist. So, and then the other one here. Okay. So I had a really big problem with this line. So it went as soon as Laris and Picard beam into her apartment and Laris turns to him and says, are you sure that she said she was murdered here in her apartment? And she's the one who's pushing the agenda of the Jat Vash being able to do all this stuff. The fact that she says, are you sure she was murdered here?
Well, no. The way that I took that is, you know, she comes into the apartment and she's like, it doesn't look like there's any sign that anything at all happened here. Are
because
you sure?
Because the Jat Vash
Hold on. But I think that she was saying that. I mean, I think she knows of the Jat Vash's capabilities, but it was more a question like, are you sure this is the right apartment?
Yeah.
I just want to make sure because it doesn't look like anything has happened here. I know they can do a lot of stuff, but let me just make absolutely sure this is the right place, and then we can spend some time here. I didn't have a problem with it whatsoever.
But that's not what she said. She said, are you sure? She said that he was murdered here in her apartment.
Oh, that her boyfriend was murdered there in the apartment.
Yeah. Right. Okay. And yeah, then on top of that, the next line, when Picard says, your Jatvash, and she says, first, they're not my Jatvash, and I thought you didn't believe in them? He's just heard of them 5 minutes ago. He doesn't disbelieve. He's actually completely going with her story in
He does his seem to be going office. With it, but he seemed quite skeptical at first, and they were talking about it as a myth.
It wasn't him that's skeptical.
That's so interesting that you reacted that way, because I didn't think of anything about that. Like,
it's Zabin that's skeptical. Zabin's the one who's skeptical, not Picard.
It's so interesting, the things that... that you have issues with, because I heard that, like, I'll agree with the science fiction line, like, that wasn't needed, but for the lines in the apartment, I thought it was okay for me, but all right.
And then the F-bombs, I mean, we'll mention
one F-bomb. Oh, let's talk about that for a minute. Okay, so the Admiral does use the F-word, Laris does not, the subtitles are wrong. In Ireland, there is a word that is very similar to that F word with an E in it, which is actually not considered to be a swear word, but they misinterpreted it for the subtitles.
Do me a favor and just go up to everybody at your office and call them a cheeky, what she said, and tell me if people don't have a problem with it.
I don't know. Maybe I will. Okay. So, little sidebar on that, guys, and I'm going to talk about this, because... there's a show that I really like, an Irish show that's called Father Ted, where they use that word like all the time, and they're actually weren't allowed to use any swear words on that show, I think, and they consciously avoid it and make a distinction. But I think in Ireland, at least when you're using that, it's, as far as I know, it's not actually considered to be like a swear word.
So this is okay because it's not a swear word in one country on the planet.
Yeah.
Well, it's not that word.
But it's not the same as the word that is a swear word for us. Like, and I guess I've gotten used to it because I heard that word like a lot in this show, which is a pretty funny show about three priests on an island that are exiled. Anyway, that's a whole other thing. But
anyways, I'm just saying, okay, so they used it, right? And I don't have a problem that she's Irish. I don't have a problem that she learned her language from the Irish, right? It's not the only one. There's two in there. Again, I'm not going to bring this up every time there's a swear in Picard. I'm bringing it up now because this is the first one and there's two. And again, everybody can be comfortable with it because it's not a swear in Ireland. Okay.
No, that's for the fine. One, but the other one definitely is. But I actually appreciated it in the scene because a real person, like... would say that in that situation. Mm-hmm. A real person would do that.
Yes.
That was perfectly in context.
And there are many instances in the 28 previous seasons of Star Trek where somebody would have used that word, but they didn't. Right? Yeah. Again, I watch a lot of shows. They don't have to use the word. Mm-hmm. Okay? And again, this will be the only time in Picard, in the podcasting, that I bring it up. Because I just think it's not necessary.
Okay.
They might use other words you have to mention. I don't know.
Well, look at Battlestar Galactica with them saying frack, right?
Yeah.
I mean, like, again, that's not Star Trek. That's different.
Farscape,
But they invented a word for it. I won't bring it up ever again. They could swear like sailors every other episode going forward. I will never mention swearing in Picard again.
But it is still a little bit jarring because they're not used to it in Star Trek.
Yeah. Will there be a cameo by George Carlin's ghost?
I hope so.
That'd be funny.
That would be really
the seven
funny.
Words you can't say on Star Trek. I'm going to say them right now. Yeah.
I will say just as a point of, I don't know what, contention with this. A lot of people wrote a lot of angry letters to NBC about the end of City on the Edge of Forever and Let's Get the Hell Out of Here.
Yeah, because at the time that was something that you didn't say on TV.
So,
but yeah,
you know, Star Trek does break ground in many ways.
Well, and there are the movies where there is some swearing,
which I still don't like. Generations is my favorite, and is still ridiculously childish that they made Data swear in Generations.
But he's like also sitting there singing about life forms. So I think we're dealing with somebody who has a childish interpretation of their emotions at the moment, and that's perfectly reasonable. Yes, it is an interesting tangent.
I don't like it that they used it. Somebody else brought that up. They swore before. They swore in there. Those are not the same caliber of swear, first of all. And I also didn't like it when they did in Generations, and I don't think it's necessary. Again, I curse like a sailor in my private life. Right? So, like, anyways,
We're, so I'm Brandon done. As a character in Star Trek would be swearing.
I would fit right in with the Admiralty, apparently.
That's funny.
If anybody in previous seasons of Star Trek would have used that word, it would have been O'Brien. You can totally see him doing that on Deep Space Nine, just kicking something.
He would have used the word Laris did, because yeah. He's Irish.
Well, okay, that's true.
Anyway.
That is true. All right, so any other questions or concerns?
Yeah, I'm questioning, how did we get an hour and 40 minutes out of this?
I know.
I know. Well, it's not 2 hours yet.
Jeez Louise. No. We still got to do the outro.
I know.
Yeah, that'll be efficient. Quick. All right, so have we done our final thoughts already? Does anybody have anything they want to add?
I'm spent.
Yeah.
I'll just have a few final thoughts just to say, like, yeah, this is very much like a setup episode, but I think there's a lot of interesting things going on. I was surprised that there was like a little bit more that I had like issues with in this episode, but I did still love overall what they were doing, mm-hmm. and just looking forward to next week. Let's see, Hugh.
Yeah.
Yes.
Looking forward to
Jonathan DeLarco. Mm-hmm. I haven't seen any previews yet. I still don't know what happens in anything coming up. Mike was talking about they got like a season preview at the end
Earth
of the first
episode. Earth blows up. It's crazy. Earth blows up next week.
Red Matter comes back.
Yep.
Yeah, they did a season preview, and then in the Will Wheaton show, The Ready Room, they did like an episode preview for next week. So I won't spoil anything. Earth survives, I think.
For now.
For now. Yeah.
Okay, well, it has been a lot of fun talking about Maps and Legends, but that isn't the only thing we've been talking about here on the network. Here's what you might have missed elsewhere on Trek FM.
Previously on Trek.fm, The Line, a Star Trek Picard podcast.
A concern that a lot of people brought up was that when you see Utopia Planitia, there's several Discovery-era ships that you see there.
I don't understand how people can have a problem with that.
But let's talk about it a little bit. Because
how long was the Excelsior class around for?
Yeah, that's my point as well. There's also a TOS shuttle in Generations in the 24th century, mm-hmm. and a bunch. And there could be like a story reason for that, right?
Earl Grey.
There's one point that annoys me, and it's the using the transporter to reverse the whole thing, and they find a hair on her brush. That's in the, like, why would you keep your hairbrush in the back of the second drawer down?
I don't know. I'm sure people do it today.
No, I keep my hairbrush in a drawer.
In the back of the second drawer down, though. Like, she's got, like, eight
there
drawers.
There may be items more important in the top drawer.
So, Joe, you're worried about, like, the drawer placement the and the part of the drawer? I love that.
Primitive Culture. A look at history and culture through Star Trek.
You can go back and you can see a lot of the familiar arguments that we associate with modern Star Trek fandom playing out in fandom in real time in the 90s through fanzines like Cine Fantastique, for example. And what happens during the second season, if you read the interviews on various episodes, is that you see writers and people working on the show using the magazine in order to advance their own narrative of the production of Voyager.
Standard Orbit.
The season as a whole is just this tremendous journey. It's a roller coaster that, when you get to Operation Annihilate, takes a very sharp drop very suddenly, but at least it's over very quickly. But like as it goes, you're ramping up and up and up and up, and it's amazing to watch in those terms. So that would probably be why it would be maybe my fourth favorite Star Trek season ever.
And that's what else is happening on Trek.fm.
So check out all these shows and join the conversation about your favorite corner of the Star Trek universe and beyond. You'll find us wherever you get your podcasts. If you're an Apple user, please be sure to hit the subscribe button at Apple Podcasts on iPhone, iPad, or Apple TV, or on the desktop Apple Podcasts app. To get the latest, I'm still messing that up. It's going to take me a long time because I've recorded a lot of podcasts where I say iTunes.
Yep.
No.
The desktop Apple Podcast app to get the latest episodes as soon as they are published. And please leave us a star rating and a written review. That helps others to find the show. Please, pretty please with sugar on top. Can you give us a rating and review, please?
That would be excellent. Yeah. So if you're not an Apple user, we've got you covered as well. You can find our shows on Google Podcasts, Stitcher, TuneIn, Spreaker, SoundCloud, YouTube, and most third-party apps. And you can stream and download the MP3 file from our website or grab the RSS link.
And don't forget about the rest of our Picard coverage throughout the week. Commentary will be available as tracks on the line. Feedback will be discussed on postcards on the line. And you can catch the full analysis right here on our main show for the line. You'll find all of these in the main feed for the line and the Trek FM master feed.
Before I say my next line, I looked it up.
Yeah.
We've got 4.5 out of 5 average rating right now. We've got 20 ratings, but we've only had three reviews.
Three reviews, yeah.
So generally people like it. Somebody probably gave us a 1 out there, but, you know, we don't know you give us a 1 if you don't write anything. So write us and tell us how terrible we are.
Yeah.
Or how good we are.
Yeah.
Either way.
Yeah. Give us your honest feedback. We can take it.
Yes. We'd love to hear your thoughts on Picard, and there are many ways for you to do that. The best place to join in the larger conversation is the Babel Conference, our listeners group on Facebook. I'm going to call it Feckbook.
Yeah.
I think that's Tinder.
That's Tinder. Just type Babel, that's B-A-B-E-L, into the search field on Facebook, and it should come right up.
If you'd like to send us an email, you can use the form on our website at trek.fm/contact. Choose to send to a show and select the line. That will come right to us. And you can also find the network on Twitter and Instagram at trekfm and on Facebook at facebook.com/trekfm. So, Chrissy, where can people contact you when you're not cursing out Jean-Luc Picard?
Oh, I would never do that. Right. So,
hey,
of course,
you haven't been in Clancy's situation. You don't know yet.
That's true. Yes. And I'm certainly no stranger to swearing. Right. So, of course, I'm on the line here, and people can find me in the Babel Conference and on Twitter as the Goddess Livia. That's TheGoddessLivia. And you can also follow my work as an historian by liking the Facebook page my fellow historian partner and I run, History with the Zilagis, and that's spelled Szilagyis. Where we post about our historical research, which includes my blog and short podcast, Ancient Aliens is BS, where I go episode by episode debunking the History Channel series. So, Brandon, where can people contact you when you're not pretending you don't swear, even though you do in real life?
I don't pretend I don't swear. I freely admit
I know, swear. Guys, it's funny. I probably swear the least of the three of us. It rarely happens for me.
I can see that.
Yes.
You can see that?
Okay. My goal is to get you just wasted at Vegas this year and have you cussing like a Laris all the way up and down.
I don't really drink, so.
We'll make it happen.
So it won't take much then.
Oh, that's one way of looking at it.
Mm-hmm. You can find me on Twitter at Brandon Matella. You can find me over on the Fandom Podcast Network with my friends Chris and Tom. We have a show called Good Evening, an Alfred Hitchcock podcast, and we cover all of Hitch's films in chronological order. And you can find me over on the United Federation of Podcast Network with my friend Zach. We have a show called Franchise Fatigue, where we talk about films, movies, sequels, and remakes. And we're just finishing up our run on the Man with No Name series. We did 6 movies there, and coming up soon is the horror anthology Creepshow 1, 2, and 3.
Ooh.
Some of those are a lot of fun. And I guess that's pretty much everywhere you can find me. Justin, where can people contact you when you're not jumping in bed with the first Romulan you meet?
Did you know that Romulans could be so hot?
I didn't.
Well, when I'm not doing that, I guess. You can find me elsewhere on the network co-hosting Earl Grey. That's our dedicated Next Generation podcast. I do that every week with my friends Amy Nelson and Joe Keegan. Talk about lots of great Next Generation stuff and talk about stuff connected to Picard as well. We recently did a badass Data Moments, and we'll do a badass Guinan Moments coming up, so that's cool.
Is ass a swear?
Yeah.
Apparently not. You know, we've done like 6 of these episodes and nobody's complained. So I thought maybe somebody would.
I'm surprised you didn't call it bad Android bottoms episodes.
As in
bad,
smooth ass.
Android bottoms.
Smooth Android bottom Data Moments.
That's right. Yep. You can also find me on Twitter. I'm at TrekFan4747, where I tweet about nothing but Star Trek. And you can find me hanging around the Babel Conference on Facebook. So, if you'd like to help us keep all our shows coming to you each week, you can become a patron of the network on Patreon. And really, if you've listened this far and you're not a patron of our network on Patreon, please visit patreon.com/trekfm to get all the details. Perks include early access to episodes, exclusive content, producer credits, and more, available through our special patrons website, the Patron Zone. And also, if you've listened this far, become an associate producer at the $25 a month or more level, please. We would love that. All right. It requires a great deal of money to produce, host, and distribute these shows each month. We really appreciate any support you can give us and hope you'll join the team. Again, you'll find all the details at patreon.com/trekfm.
We'd like to take this opportunity to recognize our current associate producer, Norman Lau. Thank you so much, Norman, for supporting Trek FM and especially The Line.
So join us next time for another episode of The Line where we will be talking about The End is the Beginning.
So, before I do my closing, and please, Brandon, keep this in, I want to tell people what I'm about to sing for you is a song by the name of Maps and Legends, the same as the name of this Picard episode, and it was a song by R.E.M. from 1985. So here we go. Maybe he's caught in the legend. Maybe he's caught in the mood. Maybe these maps and legends have been misunderstood.
I don't know that song, and I'm sick, so I can't sing today. I got no sing today. Sorry, guys. So my line is going to be, you cheeky beep.
Go then. Take them with you. You can die together.